Kami v. FDIC 10-3879. And is it Mr. Shufflebein or Ben? Shufflebein.
May it please the court. My name is Chad Shufflebein, and I represent the plaintiff appellants, the Velachami family and the Velachami Foundation. This case is about providing plaintiffs with a remedy. The issue before the court today is whether the district court erred when it dismissed in its entirety and with prejudice the Velachami's complaint against the FDIC, which alleged that the FDIC acted outside and contrary to its powers in connection with the closing of Mutual Bank in July of 2009. Specifically, the Velachami's alleged that the FDIC improperly induced them to make certain investments in Mutual Bank before it failed, that it changed the criteria by which it evaluated the bank before it failed, thereby depriving the Velachami's of their investments, that the FDIC hired an independent counsel that had a conflict of interest, and that the FDIC ignored the bank's multiple requests in July of 2009 to redeem certain notes that two of the Velachami's, Pethi and Paraswami, had purchased from the bank, the redemption of which would have benefited the bank because it would have paid off a problem loan. And the Velachami's had agreed to place the proceeds of the redemption on deposit with the bank in a no-interest fund.
How would this have benefited the bank? What was the problem loan?
It's in paragraph 28 of our complaint, Your Honor, and it would have paid off the Dollar Wall loan, which was a problem loan, and it also...
That was the capital loan with money lent
yes.
by the bank.
Yes. And then the proceeds of the redemption, the Velachami's had agreed to put those on deposit with the bank in a no-interest-bearing deposit account.
And after that deposit, did it go back to some sort of a neutral zone as far as the capitalization?
It would have been neutral as far as the capitalization.
Okay,
yes.
And then something happened after that. Did other loans get questioned or go under? And that then
well, the bank had eventually closed at the end of the month in July of 2009.
But at some point they were saying, well, you got to put in another $70 million or something.
There was, over a period of time, the Velachami's were told by the FDIC, if you want to save this bank, you have to put in additional capital, which
they
did.
And that's when they thought they got shafted by putting in the first 30.
Exactly, because the FDIC kept on changing the goalposts. They kept on saying...
Well, the FDIC, I thought, kept on looking at more and more of the troubled loan portfolio.
Well, they were also changing the criteria by which they were evaluating the bank.
Is it your theory that the bank should have been closed earlier?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it would have been if they had put in the $30 million then.
Well, that's not clear. What they were told was if you put this many millions of dollars in, you will have the bank well capitalized. And they were operating under the assumption that if we put this in, the bank will be fine. And so the FDIC kept on changing the goalposts, which is what we alleged in the complaint.
I'm not sure that's a legal theory, but
no.
But we're all familiar with the metaphor. But what troubles me about this is that at least a good part of your case seems to be premised on the theory that the FDIC knew more about the bank's troubled portfolio than the owners did.
No, Your Honor. What we complain about is the FDIC, again, using the metaphor, changing the goalposts.
Well, is your position that the bank was never insolvent and should never have been closed?
It's our position that what we did we thought was sufficient to keep the bank going. We also complained.
Is your contention that as of the end of July, the bank was solvent and should have been allowed to go forward. I don't see that anywhere in your theories.
No, that's not part of our
cause
of action.
And so you've also told me you don't think the bank was closed too late. It shouldn't have been closed earlier.
Well,
right?
That's really beyond our pleadings.
Mm-hmm.
What we had alleged was, again, using the metaphor of moving the goalposts, we said that they were changing. They wrongfully induced us to invest this money. Then when we asked...
But if they had not, then the bank would have closed earlier, right?
That's not clear.
It's not?
Well, other investors could have come in, but the Valachamis did what they were asked to do, which was invest in the bank.
So I'm having a hard time trying to understand what FDIC corporate did that was so improper, because they were assessing the portfolio, the bank's portfolio, and so you keep calling it changing the goal. I'm not as familiar with these football terms as my colleagues here, but moving the goalpost. And, you know, what I'm just having trouble figuring out what it is that the FDIC did that was wrong, improper, or, you know, because they were looking at the whole portfolio and they, it seemed to me, were trying to help keep the bank going.
Right. And I think that's really a merits question. But in response to that, it was, yes, changing the goalpost, but also the FDIC corporate in July of 2009, the bank had sent a request to the FDIC to redeem the notes because they needed permission to do so under 1828I. No response whatsoever. There was never any decision.
In 29 days, right?
That, yes.
Okay. Where is there an obligation for the FDIC to move more quickly on that kind of a request?
There isn't a specific timeline on that request, but in light of the fact that we sent that request twice, and apparently they knew they were going to be closing the bank at the end of the
month. You guys had already gotten a notice, right, from the state authorities that this was, and why on earth would the FDIC approve such a transaction when the bank is about to be closed?
Well, it would have been neutral to the bank's capital. It also would have improved.
Not neutral with respect to the insurance obligation, though.
No, Your Honor.
Which is for the benefit of depositors, not for owners.
The fund is for the benefit of depositors, mm-hmm. correct. But what we are alleging is that the FDIC, corporate and receiver, act in concert in order to get us to invest additional monies, knowing that they were going to use that to set off the losses to the fund later on.
The receiver didn't even exist at that point, right?
The receiver was not appointed until the bank closed, but the division did. And so what we're saying is, on the corporate side, we sent that request, albeit there's no timeline, two requests, one ignored. And going back to the complaint, the district court dismissed the complaint because, as to counts one and two, which are brought under the Administrative Procedures Act, the district court said FERIA controlled under those two claims. However, we cited to a case, James Madison, that said when the FDIC acts outside or contrary to its authority, the district court should have review of the FDIC's actions, and also FERIA wouldn't have applied to FDIC corporate. And there are a couple of district court cases, one from Judge Koukouras and another from the District of Massachusetts, that basically say that the FDIC is not some sacred cow that can graze on the rights of others without review of the courts. And that's all that we were asking for in our complaint. And so we believe that the...
You're asking for many millions of dollars, right?
Well,
and under the APA, why isn't that a compensatory remedy, in essence, for negligent regulation?
What we're asking for on the notes is a redemption. What we had asked for the corporate to do was to approve the redemption, again, that would not have harmed the bank and would have benefited it.
Well, it would have harmed the FDIC and its depositor insurance fund.
But
would have put additional taxpayer dollars at risk.
Not necessarily, because it was our understanding that if we put that money forward, the bank would have been turned around. That's what we were being told.
But you want to go from a lender to a depositor. you wanted to go from number 4 to number 2, and then that would subject it to the FDIC guarantee.
Well, we would have gone from the redemption, and then we agreed to put those funds on deposit for the bank's use.
Which is, of course, protected.
So if the bank did close, it was protected, yes. They would have been in the position of a depositor.
Counsel, let me be just as clear as I can be about my concerns about your APA, Administrative Procedure Act, claims based upon the FDIC's refusal to or failure to act upon your 1828I request. Okay. At this point, after the bank's closure, that looks an awful lot to me like a damages remedy, which the APA does not allow, and also seems to present a very serious threat of really opening up floodgates in these bank closure problems for owners to come in, owners who have run banks into the ground, whatever the merits may be for your individual clients, but owners who've run their banks into the ground, to then come back and sue the FDIC to try to extract some additional millions of taxpayer dollars out of this insurance fund that's there for depositors, not owners.
With respect to the floodgates question that you have, Your Honor, each case has to be determined on its own.
Well, have there been any cases like this before?
No, and that's
where
that's the
damages
interesting
have
point.
Been awarded for errors in administration?
Well, with respect to the notes, we're not asking for damages. We're asking
You're asking for a check for $1 million. For many millions of dollars. Right?
We're asking that the FDIC corporate would have allowed the bank to redeem the notes, which then would have been on deposit.
The bank doesn't exist anymore, right?
Well, the receiver does. And so the receiver has taken over the bank, and that's why we named the receiver in the complaint, because we would need the receiver to affect
Let's get back to the point.
Okay.
You want many millions of dollars. Has any prior case approved such a theory under the APA against the FDIC?
No, Your Honor. In fact, the district court had noted that this was a unique first impression case, which surprised us as to why it would dismiss it so summarily.
Well, another one explanation is that you're seeking damages, and the APA says no.
Well, we're not seeking. We're asking the FDIC corporate to approve the redemption of the notes, which then would have been.
How is that different?
That's for money. That's for cash.
No,
I mean I don't get that either. I don't get that.
It's not asking the government to cut a check. It's asking the bank funds the bank had would have been put in a different account.
And that would be money. It's 23 million, 23.6 million.
Yes,
right?
Your Honor. Yes, it would have been on deposit. Had corporate approved that request that was made twice, it would have been on deposit with the bank.
But that's what you want the FDIC to put into that account.
Ultimately, that's the relief that
right.
we seek in the complaint.
So
but
that's money.
It is money.
Right. And money, you can't do it under the APA. You can't give money damages.
We're not asking for an award of damages. We're asking that they perform.
I mean, I understand.
The result would be money.
You want to dance around with the language, but the bottom line is it's cash. However you slice it, that's what you're really asking the FDIC to do.
We're just asking the FDIC to do that transaction that we requested twice in July. It is money, but it's not. We're not asking for a check from the Treasury.
You want to redefine it from a note that was loaned to the bank to a deposit.
Not redefine it, have the bank redeem the note,
which
would have put on deposit.
That's what it is, though, really.
Okay.
Under the APA, we actually couldn't order the FDIC to redeem the note. We could order it to make a decision, right?
Yes.
And whom would it order to make a decision? The FDIC would make a decision. And who would have to redeem those notes?
Corporate would make the decision. Receiver would then effectuate that decision.
I do note that your complaint does say you want the court to order the FDIC to pay plaintiffs Velushami's $5 million in damages and Anu Velushami $1.7 million in damages and Arun Velushami $600,000 in damages and the foundation $2.0 million in damages.
that was the investment that they made, and our request is to have restitution for that.
Your theory is that this is an equitable restitutionary remedy?
It would be returning our investment that we made based on the FDIC's statements to us if we invested in the bank.
Has any other case, I mean, these problems presumably arise all the time, right? There's going to be all kinds of second guessing about a closure of a bank and when it should have been closed, and this will come up all the time, right?
Well, there is questions all the time about things mm-hmm. that happen with a bank closing, but as noted by the district court, the type of relief that we sought has not been addressed.
Which means nobody has ever come up with this theory before.
Nobody's said yes, and nobody said no.
Okay. If I could shift gears a little bit to your FIREA complaint under count 3.
Yes.
Section 1821D. What exactly are the claims that are at issue here?
I see that I'm out of time, Your Honor.
I'd very much like an answer, right? And I do have a little bit of follow-up, given the complexity of the case.
The claims are the claims that we made within the 60 days after the bank closure to the FDIC.
Do we have those in the record?
I don't believe copies are in the record, but they are referenced in the complaint.
What are they?
They are claims made on behalf of each one of the plaintiffs under FIREA to the bank, which are similar to the claims that
for
we have.
What?
For the amounts that are in the complaint.
Well, do the claims assert that the bank owes the owners money?
No, it's the same theory
right.
that we have alleged in the complaint.
That it's the FDIC that wronged them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, here's my concern there. Is that Section 1821D, the claims process for a bank that's being liquidated or reorganized like this, seems to contemplate only claims against the bank. That is, it's for creditors of the bank. It's not a vehicle for regulatory claims, that is, claims of this kind of, you know, regulatory error against the FDIC.
Well, I believe they are claims against the bank, but the receiver
And what obligations of the bank do those claims seek to enforce?
It was the request, as with respect to the notes, the request that the bank had made of the FDIC prior to closure.
Okay. Now, you're saying that the FDIC breached some duty
yes.
to your clients.
Yes.
What duty did the bank supposedly breach to your clients?
The bank did not breach any duty to the clients.
Then I don't understand how you've got a claim under 1821D.
We filed a claim under 1821D asking for the same relief that we filed in the complaint.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
I'm out of my rebuttal time.
1 minute
for
rebuttal.
You.
We had a lot of questions for you. Ms. Van Sia.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Minodora Vencia, counsel for FDIC Corporate and FDIC Receiver. I would like to start by addressing some of the questions that were discussed earlier. One of them was what claims have been made against the receiver in the proof of claim. I assumed, based on what was discussed in the complaint, that the claim in the proof of claim was receiver, the bank's board promised us that they will repurchase the notes. Please repurchase the notes. However, as the district court explained, the bank's board's promise to repurchase the notes was not only gratuitous, but it was unenforceable. It was unenforceable because as long as there was no corporate approval, Section 1828I rendered that promise invalid. Only when a promise to repurchase this note only becomes valid once there is corporate approval. For that reason, because there was no enforceable claim against the bank, there was also no enforceable claim against the receiver who stands in the shoes of the bank. That's what the district court held, and he was right. Now, assume for the sake of the argument that they had a valid claim against the bank, that for some reason corporate approved their request to repurchase the note. plaintiffs would still not have a valid claim against the receiver. Under Section 1821 D2H, which we cite in our brief, plaintiffs don't only have to have valid claims against the bank, they also have to be satisfying the limitations of Section 1821 D. And one of those limitations is the priority scheme, which puts subordinated creditors like plaintiffs in fourth priority. So if the bank for some reason didn't go through with the promise to repurchase the notes, the receiver couldn't have done it because he would have placed plaintiffs in a higher priority than they were entitled to once the bank was in receivership. The other point I wanted to make is on the other question that was asked, is whether if there was any case like this one in which courts have awarded money damages to plaintiffs under the APA for alleged misrepresentations or failure to disclose or bad examinations made by the FDIC. The answer is no. And we didn't get into this into our brief because we had our jurisdictional argument on the money damages, but there is a very simple answer for that. It's because such tort claims, there is exclusive jurisdiction under the FTCA. That's where you could bring a money damages claim against federal agencies. However, and I presume this is why plaintiffs haven't filed a claim under the FTCA, the FTCA expressly bars claims based on misrepresentation. So Congress has made a decision that claims based on misrepresentations by regulators or other agencies are never permissible. Because the FTCA says if a claim is cognizable under the FTCA, which this one is because it's a tort claim, FTCA is the exclusive remedy, so you can't bring a claim under the APA. And that provision is 28 U.S.C. 2679. And then 2680 says you cannot, 2680 Part H says you cannot bring a claim for misrepresentation against the FDIC for errors it made in the examination or other misleading statements that you might have relied on. And this court has a case, which is Emk versus United States, 630 F2D 523 from 1980, that rejects precisely such misrepresentation claims against FDIC as a regulator.
What was the citation again, please?
630 F2D 523. And I mean, I didn't want to go into the FTCA in the brief because I think this fails on the jurisdictional reason that this is money damages claims.
Well, suppose the board or whatever, the bank, had transferred those notes and put them in as a deposit. I assume that would have been challenged as a fraudulent transfer.
Yes, Your Honor, we would have challenged that as a fraudulent transfer, as we say in our brief under 1821 D17. And there is an exception when a transfer is to pay on antecedent debt. And here we have an antecedent debt, which is the debt on the notes. However, courts have held that when it's an antecedent debt to insiders like plaintiffs here, who are the owners of the bank or the directors of the bank, then the fraudulent transfer provision applies.
Counsel, could I ask you, on this issue of approvals of these transactions under 1828I?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Let's take this out of the context of a bank that's about to fail, or at least is in danger. Let me hypothesize that a decision maker in the FDIC has some kind of personal grudge against the owners of a bank and arbitrarily refuses to approve a transaction. Is there any mechanism for a remedy or judicial review of that kind of decision?
Yes, Your Honor, of course. So Section 706 of the APA allows you when either no decision has been made at 706-1, then you can force corporate to render a decision.
Delayed decisions.
Yeah, so to issue, you would issue an order saying, corporate, please make a decision. Then corporate makes a decision. If the owners don't like it, then they can appeal that decision to this court under the arbitrary and capricious standard, and that's APA 706 point, part 2. Or directly, if the corporate does issue a decision and it's wrong, owners believe it's wrong, then it can be challenged under the arbitrary and capricious standard. The reason why this cannot happen here It's because once the bank fails, corporate loses regulation authority over the receiver. There is a provision, and we cited it in our brief, but for a different purpose. The provision is 1821C3 that says the receiver, C3C, says the receiver is not subject to regulation by any federal or state banking agency. So once the bank fails, corporate cannot do anything and cannot now approve the repurchase request. If there are no further questions, we ask that you affirm the decision below.
All right. Thank you, counsel. 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the fraudulent transfer issue, I think it's getting beyond the pleadings. What we have appealed is the district court's dismissal of the complaint, and we're just asking for the opportunity to have the FDIC corporate's and receiver's decisions reviewed. I think the cases support, again, that the term was used in two of the cases, that the FDIC is not some sacred cow that's above review. And that's simply what we're asking for here, is to have the district court's November 10th, 2010 order of dismissal reversed along with the judgment. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement. We'll go to the third.